And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And this is the second portion of our show tonight, which is the portion where I interview an author. And I have author Lorraine Rowe, who wrote the book, The Psychic Housewife's Handbook, How to Keep Your Feet on the Ground and Your Head in the Stars. And I have a feeling this is going to be a great interview because while reading this book, there was a lot of humor. And I think, Lorraine, you must have a great sense of humor. So welcome.
Hi, thanks. It's so great to be here. I really appreciate it. I know we've had a long-standing date to do this, so I'm excited.
We have, and a tad few little problems on the way, but that's okay.
Clunk, 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 clunk.
Yeah. Okay, so why don't you tell us a little bit about your journey? I know your book has kind of been about your journey, and it certainly is. We're going to talk about some really interesting topics tonight, I think. So why don't you tell us a little bit about how this got started for you?
Well, I guess about 7 years ago, I had just stopped being an investigative reporter and started meditating and doing yoga and kind of calming down. And I've had intuitive experiences my whole life, but after kind of slowing down quite a bit for months and months and months, I ended up having a pretty startling psychic experience where a ghost or a spirit, I should say, a grandmother showed up to me at my home office and ended up talking to me about a little boy and showing me pictures of this little boy who turned out to be a doctor friend of mine who I had no idea about this portion of his background. And when I told him about it, he was like, yeah, that's right on. I have an exact picture of that. And that kind of brought in all these other psychic, so-called psychic abilities, all of a sudden came flooding in. And what prompted me to write the book, The Psychic Housewife's Handbook, is that I now, of course, have gone on to become psychic and also meet so many other people, particularly women in this case, who are having rapid psychic development happen to them by just doing some very basic things.
Mm-hmm. Now, you sort of talk in your book about, you know, kind of being in a state of denial. Why did you resist it? What, I mean, you were kind of in, you know, your traditional high-powered media position, so I could understand that. But you said you just started, left it, but there was a lot of resistance. And, you know, I have to tell you, there was a lot of resistance to me, and there's a lot of resistance to the word psychic. So keep going.
Right. Well, that's the point. I mean, you know, I just picked up Carolyn Mace's book, Defy Gravity, and she talks about how grace happens, but it usually happens, I'm going to paraphrase, under fire. You know, it's not that fun. I think that's why people don't heed the call sometimes, because they intuitively know they're going to have to take some risks. And, you know, I think if you'd laid out my entire journey, I think I would have been consciously, and probably this may have happened to you too, I think it would have been laid out consciously for me bit by bit. I probably just said, no thanks. I'll just go back and do news and be a workaholic. That's good enough for me. But, you know, because it's not completely revealed what your path is, you just kind of, I think you hesitate with good reason, because, you know, once you jump in, you know, you're following divine reason, which isn't very reasonable. In fact, divine, it can be insane, as we know, because divine takes things in a way that's much more intuitive and probably not completely rational. So, you know, I mean, for me, the resistance was there, but I was lucky enough to have some great mentors, including Echo Bodine, who is a published psychic who I was friends with before my psychic abilities came in. So she actually was able to witness the change in me and kind of nurture me through them.
Right. I did an interview with Echo last year, so I'm well aware.
She's amazing. I adore Echo. She's just a very grounded, very loving person who has a lot of really very, very clear things to say on the topic of psychic ability.
Mm-hmm. So what helped you then to consciously start listening and following this guidance?
You know, I just think it's like when I look around, everybody's so busy being busy that I think they forget to ask why they're so busy. And, you know, it's like now I think it's more of a meditative state, not a vegetative state. Although when you're a mother, sometimes you feel like a vegetable. But, I mean, it's this place of kind of really being aware and conscious and following your gut. Like, do I really need to do this? Do I really have to move in this direction? And for me, I asked. I've always had this kind of point, you know, where I reach where I'm like, look, I've got to treat spirit or guides or God like they're a friend. So I've got to have honest communication and expect return information. So sometimes I'm just like, if I think I'm supposed to do something, I'm like, okay, lay out three signs or make it easy. I'm not doing it. And I know you're, you know, it's like sometimes I just need to make demands on the universe because I know the universe ends up making a lot of demands on me and my time. So,
right. You also mentioned that, you know, for the psychic housewife and specifically for you, that your children have played a huge role in assisting and part of the reason why a lot of the housewives get involved.
Well, the first and foremost way that women, I connect with women who want to know more about their abilities is their children are either having psychic experiences, like they know things, they're mind readers, they're sensing things, or they're seeing ghosts. And, you know, kids don't have the same filters we have up about this stuff. And so it's a much more natural state of being to see the other dimensions and hear the other dimensions. So a lot of times it'll turn out to be kind of a concern or a problem, the children, about seeing ghosts or having these abilities, and the moms will start going, oh yeah, and then the moms will begin to remember that they had some of those abilities when they were kids, but they kind of shut them down. And in my case as a mommy, I mean, my kids not only ground me, but they also have their own abilities. I mean, my son is a very huge mind reader, my little five-year-old. I mean, I'll be thinking of something or visualizing it, and he will start talking about it.
That can be dangerous.
Yes, it can. And you know, when he had a preschool teacher who was kind of cranky, actually, and he would just say to her, you're really angry, you're really angry. And that would make her more angry because he was outing her, you know?
Yeah.
So I know that is a huge doorway for a lot of parents, though, to have their kids have these abilities. Now, it hasn't always been that way, and that's, you know, not always the case, because some parents are like, no way, don't want to hear it, shut it down.
Right. Well, yeah, because it can be scary, and people, you know, do have these judgments about, you know, what it means to be psychic or intuitive or however you want to phrase it, and, you know.
Right.
Yeah. And you also say that there's a growing trend in people wanting to do this for themselves.
I think that is the most exciting part of what I do right now, is just to see how people are so excited to learn this stuff for themselves. And, you know, I know years ago there were probably two or three books on the shelf about how to have psychic ability. I mean, there were two or three popular books you could find. Now, I mean, it's just the shelves are packed with them. You know, I mean, you know that. Mm-hmm. And what's really fun is that, you know, people, like when I do readings on air, I do, you know, I do radio readings or I do whatever, people will call in, and a lot of times they want to know, how's my love life? How's this? How's my, maybe a new car? But then the next really big question is, what am I doing? I mean, how do I do this myself? Or what does this mean when I see such and such happen, you know, like orbs or spirit or, you know, and they want to know because they want to get it for themselves. And you know, it's like, yeah, it's useful. I mean, these skills are useful in your daily life, you know? Mm-hmm. Like when your kids are lying to you, you can look at them and go, yeah, right. And it's, you know, and you can navigate, like, sales. And, I mean, seriously, like, you know, when you're using your intuition, this stuff really works for practical things, like getting the feeling to go to Target, and you get there and you realize, you know, the mixing bowl you really wanted is on sale.
You've mentioned that, and it seems to be a beautiful shift, but that a lot of women, the divine goddess, the sacred feminine energy is really starting to come alive.
Yeah. Well, you know, even I'm very interested in, as a friend of mine says, looking at the Sarah Palin phenomenon, because, I mean, Sarah Palin, now, whether you're political or not, and you like or don't like her, is holding up some kind of interesting energy about coming from nature. And, you know, it's like here we've got this, you know, we've got these women who are, some of them are very strong and some of them are feminine. I mean, Arianna Huffington started the Huffington Post, which really has been a huge forum for giving people their voice. And I mean, so out in the world, we're seeing these women figures who are really holding a space for a different kind of femininity. It's a pretty strong feminine role, and yet the goddess energy allows. So there's an allowing energy, too, because when you're allowing, you're just kind of sitting back and relaxing and trusting the universe is going to take care of things. And that's really the feminine way, and as I move on and move down my path, I see so much more of that kind of non-controlling attitude of these women that I know. Like I have about 150 friends on Facebook who are all kind of like-mindedness, mm-hmm. and their daily messages are just profound. I mean, and it's not. It may be grounded in doing the laundry. It may be grounded in letting the kids be the kids who they are, or you know, it may be a professional thing. But their posts are just these really, really amazing posts about basically letting go and letting God.
Mm-hmm. Nice. One of the things I like, I think, about your book the most is that you go into an area of self-care, which, you know, I think a lot of us, you know, we're so giving everywhere else. And, you know, this is a big, huge aspect of learning how to attract and learning how to create your own world. It's all about, you know, yes, we give, but we also need to learn to receive. And self-care, you know, that's something that we just don't think about. So talk about that, because you really, I think it's something that's so important that we're not doing.
Right. I agree. I don't think there's a lot of language for that. And I especially don't think there's language for that for women. I mean, you know, I don't think our mothers said to us, darling, while you're growing up, be sure to do your self-care, you know? And I mean, there's a very huge distinction between selfish behavior and self-care. I mean, selfish behavior is completely mutually exclusive of caring for anyone else. Self-care is about putting yourself in the equation and taking good care of yourself so that you can turn around and help take care of other people. It's that whole put your oxygen mask on first notion, you know, that they tell you on a plane. If you're on a plane that's losing cabin pressure and you have children next to you, they say put your oxygen mask on first as the adult so that you can then in turn help the children get theirs on. And that's the principle. You know, it's like, I mean, the women I know who are not martyrs about being mothers and being women out in the world are the ones who take the time to do their hobbies, do their exercise, have some fun, do their own thing so that they can kind of renew themselves. And also that self-care piece is also about setting boundaries where mm-hmm. you're not over-volunteering, where you're not, your first answer default position is, yes, I will, you know?
Yes.
See?
Yeah, and it's a very interesting part of the dynamics of being women. I think it's a lot of it is, you know, caught up in the collective unconscious where we're not really necessarily aware of all the times that we are giving and trying to save and trying to save the world. And we're not trying to save ourselves.
Right. I know. And why do you think that is? I mean, what is that women are so inclined to take care of everybody else and not themselves?
You know, I think it's when we come down here, as we go through and connect in with the collective unconscious, because mm-hmm. of the persecution that we've had for how many lifetimes as women and standing in our power, we were taught that, you know, we have to actually give to the man. We have to be there for them. We have to try and save them. We have to try and save our children for the future world. It's because it's so not about us. It's just this collective aspect that we sort of connect in with, and we're not aware of it. We're not conscious of it, although probably our mothers, you know, instilled some of that because they also were caught up on it, and they might have been from a different generation. And so we just are continuing the pattern and not realizing just how incredibly important it is for us to take care of ourselves.
Yeah. I think that's true. Mm-hmm. And it's it is funny because it's people mention it, people talk about it, but I don't know that there's a book or a person I would think of, you know, that right off the top of my head that would really be a poster child for self-care. And, you know, it's such an important notion, I think, in this day and age.
Yeah. And especially for women, I think. I mean, I think it is for men, too. I think a lot of times, you know, men focus more on their career. And they're very driven in a different area. So I don't think they always think about, you know, self-care for themselves, although they're driven in a different way. But for women, it's huge. And boundaries is huge.
Completely. Yeah. And, you know, women are the ones with the kids at home, and women are the ones that have a lot of ways in which boundaries can be crossed.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, hyper volunteerism with school, your kids' school, and, you know, church, and where all these social places that really don't have any rules or boundaries. You know, at the workplace, you can be asked to do a lot, but there's also some laws and boundaries in place naturally. Mm-hmm. I think the home and these volunteer places are really, really backdoors to draining our energy.
Right. So some of the things that you talk about with regards to self-care is the meditation. A lot of people, you know, I think a lot of people kind of turn away in fear of that because they think that they have to sit cross-legged and chant Om.
Yep.
And so I think a lot of people are very much turned off from that and don't really know what to do and don't really know different techniques that there are, you know, as many techniques out there as there are people. So, you know, find something that works for them.
Right. Right. And I always ask people, you know, what is your form? What's your natural form of meditation? Because for some people, they have to be moving to kind of calm down. And sometimes it's, you know, somebody will say, well, I go for a run, or I do yoga, or, you know, there's many ways to get to that meditative state.
Right.
And I was fortunate enough to find a teacher who's very affordable and wise in St. Paul. I talk about that on my website, psychichousewives.com. You know, he's still available to people. But, you know, I mean, I think finding some method and sticking with it is the whole point. Now, mm-hmm. It's not, you know, shoving it down your throat, but it's finding something that fits for you and then trying to find some consistency. Because that's where transcendental meditation. You transcend your daily worries and concerns and get a kind of a higher view. And I think it really calms you down and opens the doors to more conscious divine information.
Right. Definitely. I mean, it's incredibly important for, you know, how to connect and how to get your inner guidance and just to have your own awareness.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the, you know, that's the place of self-care to me leads to self-authority, and self-authority leads to more self-care. I mean, you know, self-authority being more your higher self instead of looking outside the institutions and books and everything else that's so prevalent out there, or government, what government says is right and wrong. I mean, there's the higher knowing, which is what you really know for yourself. And, you know, without connecting with that, you're less able to know and act on that information, that what is right exactly for you. And I find that, you know, it doesn't turn you into a lawless freak. You know, it really turns you into somebody who is more conscious about every choice that they make. And to me, my turnaround and some of the women I know, it has led to a much richer life and a life that's not so full of worry and martyrdom and you know, regret, as much as it's full of, hey, I'm making a conscious choice here with my partner, who is my higher power, and it seems to be working out pretty well.
Mm-hmm. You talk about getting a support group. Now, it sounds to me like what you're doing on Facebook is creating a support group, so it's not necessarily the traditional support group where you're going to 12-step program. You're also talking just about having something there for support for other women and, you know, and girlfriends is very important.
Yeah. And I'm finding more and more with in the age of technology that it's transcending all sorts of boundaries, you know, neighborhood boundaries, state boundaries, country boundaries, mm-hmm. because we can all hook up at the same time, same place practically, but, you know, over the internet. And although I am a fan of getting, you know, physical support too. I think because we are human, it's always nice to get into a room with somebody, if it's a friend or a support group or a 12-step group. But yeah, I think, you know, the bigger your support team, the better your life, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think it starts with our immediate family and we work out from there. And one of the things I talk about in the book is, in the Psychic Housewives Handbook, is that, you know, let's identify who's in our inner circle. You know, who are our immediate people that we want to have a good energy exchange with, and then work out from there. And then, you know, in your outer rings, you get your acquaintances or business associates. But, you know, are all these people you like, respect, and trust? Because that's who you want on your team. You don't want to have people you don't trust or like, because there's enough of that going on in the world, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we'll get to the more spiritual aspect of that in a bit. But, you know, another aspect of self-care, I believe that this is the same, is looking at some of the things in your house that are bothering you, looking at some of the things, your inner garbage as well. So things that we can find within our space and within ourselves that we can sort of look at and clear out.
Lori, did you read the book?
I did.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yes. That's the next piece of the puzzle, is finding what is in your realm and how you can get rid of them or it. Because when we start reading things energetically, we find out that, you know, things in our circle aren't always what we want them to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so that includes, you know, if you go to a thrift shop and pick up some items and you bring them home to your house and you have this creepy feeling about something, like a, you know, a gnome you found or something that's a used statue, it may be that that statue has absorbed the negativity of the previous owner and you really shouldn't have it in your house. Mm-hmm. Or it may be that a former friend has given you an item and you really shouldn't have it in your house, but you've kept it anyway, but you can feel this kind of nagging energy about it, that's kind of a vibe that you don't like. That's all stuff that you have to take into consideration, because everything's energy. And when we start waking up to that as our truth, then we start realizing, hey, items count as much as people, and so I need to stay awake and figure out, well, what do I want in my immediate realm? Because it's all holding energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I think a lot of people don't realize just how much energy impacts our lives, whether it's energy, you know, that is being released into our homes from an argument or, you know, something like that, or energy from items that we don't want, or energy from somebody who's come in who's been in a foul mood and was, you know, trying to sell you something, or, you know, there's just so much that we're not aware of at times, and how it impacts, you know, the place that is supposed to be our safe haven, where our children are.
Well, I think you can tell people that and they can go, oh, that's interesting. But the most impactful thing that happens to people is they actually experience it. Like they go, well, let me just check this out for myself. And they'll be holding an item or looking at an item and go, oh yeah, that doesn't feel good. Because it's an experience. I mean, if you know, I can't sit here and say to someone, oh yeah, that, you know, old golf club you have in your house is got some really bad vibes from grandpa. I mean, you know, they have to really go, okay, let me go check this out for myself. Yeah, that feels icky. But giving them the language and the knowledge about it is like that, you know, it's the best thing in the world, because then they can go figure these things out for themselves.
There you go. Yeah. Which is important.
It is.
Yeah. So let's talk about the ego that we also, the inner garbage, that the anger that may build up within ourselves. How do we work through that?
Well, I'm glad you asked. One of the things that I'm doing out of the book, which is actually one of the favorite exercises, and I'm actually selling energy release kits now. We put together a prototype, and now we're actually putting the packaging together. But The idea is you take a plate, you take a hammer, you take a permanent marker, and, of course, safety goggles, and you write on the plate everything that's bugging you. And the idea here is it can be worries, it can also be hopes and dreams, but as you write this stuff on the plate, then you smash it, and you just release it to the universe or God or higher power. And the notion is that all that stuff that's cluttering your mind is really kind of fogging divine's ability to get through. And but you can't treat it like it's not real, because it is. It's coming from your mind, and your mind is a very powerful piece of our lives. And so, you know, what I find is if you can do a plate breaking exercise, or you can write all of it on a piece of paper and burn it, it has some magic to it of a physical release, because what you're trying to do is just clear out these worries and move on with your life. And the biggest, most powerful piece of the puzzle is, of course, acknowledging the ego and its concerns, but also transcending its concerns and moving on.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting aspect of our lives where, you know, releasing, you know, when that phrase, letting go and letting God, surrendering, we either have, you know, we're either control freaks, which a lot of us are.
Yeah,
especially our ego, and or we have negative connotations to some of those words, and they, you know, it's really difficult to trust and have that kind of faith to be able to surrender to something that, you know, we can't necessarily see or feel or hear or know for sure is there. We just believe it is, hopefully, and, you know, having that kind of trust and that faith is really a challenge, I think, for a lot of us to get to that place where we can allow that to grow.
Yep. Oh, completely. You know, it's what I just learned to do is to experiment with it to see if divine's full of crap or not, you know? And I'm not saying that divine always has a perfect pitch answer for what I perceive should happen, but I do sometimes test the universe myself to find out if this stuff really works. And, you know, when I'm guided to do something that I perceive as crazy, and I do it anyway, then I just measure the results. You know, did it give me more options? You know, am I at peace with the ultimate result? You know, blah, blah, blah. And usually the answer, it's, you know, the proof's in the pudding, and it does actually prove to be the best, highest choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now, that being said, there's times in life where you make choices completely on your intuition, and you never know if it's exactly, you know, a reasoned thing or the thing that was really meant to happen. Because, you know, sometimes we just don't have all the answers, and that's the way it goes. But I just think on a micro level that, you know, I'm going to test it. I'm going to see if it works. You know, does my day have flow? Do things work out? And, you know, it's interesting. I write for the Huffington Post, which is, you know, pretty worldly posting, you know, blog post. And you know, I will float out these notions of finding your miracles in a daily forum, in daily life. And, you know, it's really, I got met with a lot of anger about even suggesting that you could have God help you out in small ways.
Mm.
But I think that's the trick of the ego. The trick of the ego is, no, we're going to do all of this ourselves through our intellect.
Yeah.
And when we actually put the, you know, our money where our mouth is and try this stuff on, you know, at our shopping trips and with our kids and with the laundry, then, you know, then you're really getting something tangible, because divine can handle it. You know, there's no order of difficulty in miracles, you know, according to the Course in Miracles. And so, you know, I think we can expect daily miracles in small ways just as much as big miracles.
Mm-hmm. So we have the earthly support team, and now we have the divine support team, which you suggest that God should be our co-pilot and then eventually take over the driving seat.
Right.
That we have our spirit guides and that we co-create with soul. Now, there's something that you say in here that I think is just is so great. It's, you know, that movie, you know, we trace the call and it's coming from inside the house. So, you know, how to learn to, you know, get your own answers and, you know, go within to get that. And I think you mentioned something very important and very key to what you just said. Like, you know, it's about testing and seeing, you know, treating everything like it's a science experiment. But it's, you know, for you or for all of us, is it's coming up with the right questions to ask.
Because yeah, I mean, yes. I mean, that's kind of, I guess, that seems to develop over time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Your first question is, what the heck? You know, like, and then it gets more refined, I guess. but yeah, I mean, you know, the analogy in the book is kind of getting your driver's license and your training license and then finding out that really, you know, God is the pilot, but and you throw all of it out the window. But you have to work up to that, you know. It's not you can just turn the wheel over on your first day of getting some psychic experiences. So, and you know, by the way, the word psychic, I mean, I don't know what that's about. You know, I can appreciate that, you know, a lot of these things are labeled psychic, but I think honestly they're just natural abilities that have been a little bit suppressed.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's what I call it, intuition. I always have, and I don't know if it's just because I don't like the word psychic or if it's, you know, being called a witch too many lives. Who knows?
Yes. It's kind of a harsh word. I mean, I think there's just so many connotations with the word psychic.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, intuitive, I think that's a good word. It's a good word.
Yeah. So, you know, how do you follow the driving directions when your gut says yes but your head says no?
Well, again, that's the time to have the support team in the car. You know, it's like, okay, because this is stuff that's pretty hard to do by yourself. I mean, ultimately we all walk kind of on a solo journey within our walk with to connect with God, but I think that's when that earthly support team really can help. Like somebody that can support you in like saying, yes, it does sound crazy, but yes, you seem like you intuitively know the right answer, you know? And so I think when you build up a relationship with people that are like-minded on this stuff, it really helps to get some support to follow your intuition, as well as building up your relationship with your angels or your guides, because as you get that trusting relationship going, it's going to give you more and more support to follow stuff that looks probably crazy to the rational mind and some other people in your life.
Right.
Because it is.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And you've had some interesting, shall we say, looking guides and guardians assist you with fairies.
You mean like
and
elves?
Elves and dragons. And
yeah, I mean, I see elves and fairies, and especially when I lived in the woods for about a year and a half, Northern California, boy, did I see like magical creature city. And it's really funny when I go on more of a, you know, a real kind of a worldly radio show or TV or whatever. I mean, that's the first thing people are like, you see fairies, you see this. But you know, the truth is when we kind of open up to all this stuff, there are just other dimensions. And and all the literature, all the children's books that have come through with all this information about magical creatures, you know, it's coming from somewhere. And, you know, I mean, yes, it's imagination, but imagination is the place where you access these realms. And so it's like that, you know, so the guides that we all have are going to be from many different variations and dimensions. Like, you know, a lot of people have Native American guides, and a lot of people have, you know, wise-looking ancient guides. And so, you know, for me, I mean, I've had all the gamut of, you know, magical creatures to you know, some Native Americans and some other folks. And but, you know, I mean, that's part of this whole opening up your abilities is your ability to see who your own guides are and what their background is and what they're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, okay. So now we're to try and pay attention to the signs. How do we read the signs? What do we, you know, how are we supposed to know what is a sign versus what is just something that's happening?
Well, I look for repeating patterns with signs myself. I mean, and that's what we, you know, I talk about in the book, like, you know, if something's happening two or three times, like, I wonder if I should take that trip to Italy. And, you know, you keep running into things about Tuscany, and you keep running into, you know, you meet somebody who happens to be Italian, and you know, just those things that seem a little out of the ordinary, but keep pointing in the same direction. That's a good notion. It's a sign.
Mm-hmm.
Also, repeating numbers and, you know, words and music. I mean, music's huge for signs. I really think angels work through the radio, through, you know, your iPod shuffle, whatever you're listening to. Something usually will pop up that will pertain to a question you have. And that is often another way to get in touch with divine. That's not this really lofty thing. It's just a simple thing, but you have to stay awake for it.
Right. And that's a trick.
It is a trick. It's like there's this chapter in there called Wake Up, Sleepyhead, It's Time to Really See. And that's kind of, I guess, the premise of my entire work is that, you know, when we do these things, when we start, I have exercises in the book, but, you know, when we start taking the baby steps, the action steps, it wakes us up. It's like having, a triple shot espresso. You know, you start really seeing things that you wouldn't have seen before because you're awake for them.
Mm-hmm. And that's where we have to let go of control and, you know, let God sort of take over.
Well, yeah, and I mean that's the ultimate act of faith is realizing, you know, that there might be a better plan than the one you have. It's like, you know, that old joke, how do you make God laugh? Tell him your plans. And, you know, there's some truth to that, because, I mean, my personal experience is that my vision for my life, even though I do believe in visualization and having positive images about what you want, I do completely believe that works. But I've also found it to be true that even my imagination is limited by my ego. And so when I actually allow God to do it even better, I get some amazing things happening in my life that I could never even have envisioned as a possibility.
Right.
And that's why, you know, I like, this is like playing like, you know, Russian roulette or gambling in Vegas, but I like to get up every once in a while and go, okay, universe, surprise me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know what that means.
Uh-huh.
Whoa. But, you know, it's usually a pretty funny thing that will come in for me. Like, you know, like one day I just didn't want to cook dinner, and my former babysitter kind of just decided one night to show up and cook dinner for our family. And I mean, you know, that was this complete surprise, and it was also an answered prayer.
Yeah. So you talk about all the things that separate us from our inner connection and our connection with God, and that's, you know, all the, I guess, the inner feelings or the inner emotions that we allow to take us over, which are shame and anger and fear and our abandonment, the story that we sort of tell ourselves. You know, these are the things when we feel betrayed. These are the things that sort of shut us down.
Well, I think we have a garbage heap that we keep piling on with our feelings. And I'm all for feelings, but I think the issue becomes we don't release them. And so it starts to pile on and kind of interrupt our flow with divine. And I think our feeling center is really important in that it actually does tell us stuff. Like if we're angry at someone, it could be because they're trying to control and manage us. There could be very valid reasons for that anger. And I think the key to it is speaking your truth, trying to communicate in an honest way with the person if it is, you know, possible to do that. But also, again, releasing. I mean, again, the plate breaking, the burning of paper, that if you're sad, I mean, just a simple cry, you know, just the physical manifestation of having your feelings and releasing them is very powerful. Mm-hmm. And I think we have these feelings in place for very, very powerful reasons. And I don't know why. I don't know why we always want to suppress them or store them and stack them but not really get rid of them and release them, but we do that. And what I know from my journey and a lot of women I know is once they start just allowing, again, that sacred feminine energy, allowing their feelings to just be and be there, it really results in some really powerful outcomes.
Right. Also, you suggest that we should stop trying to figure it out.
Yes.
Because I think we go over it and over it and over it in our head.
Yes. You know, when you understand energy, what you come to know is that you working it over and over and over again in your head is completely useless. I mean, it doesn't get you anywhere. And so, like my grandmother used to say, today is the tomorrow I worried about yesterday, you know? And, I mean, it's coming anyway. The day's coming. So why not just go out and have some fun? And you can be, you know, if you imagine a four square, like A, B, C, D, four squares, you can have a problem in A, and you can wander off to square D and go play. Go, I don't know. For me, it's ride my motorcycle or go for a hike or spend time with my family. And A, the energy that's going on in square C is going to go over to square A without me trying to get in there and manage it, you know, myself. And so, I mean, there's a magical way energy works that when you just say, okay, look, I am not going to devote any more of my headspace to this issue, it really, really does give it some kind of release and alchemy so that the universe can really do its thing.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about ghosts.
Boo. Well, ghosts, you know, I'm not going to make a big campaign against ghosts if people are comfortable with them. You know, I mean, what we talk about in the book is if you've got a haunting in your house, you know, you got to treat it like it's a guest, you know. Is it a welcome house guest or is it a pain in the neck house guest? And a lot of times the problem with ghosts, I mean, now some ghosts are fine, and sometimes there's animal ghosts that are very benevolent and children ghosts. But a lot of times when you're talking about straight up ghosts, they're trapped. They're mm-hmm. in between two worlds and they're looking for a place to haunt, to kind of rattle around and cause some trouble. And I think the litmus test is you know, if they were human and they were doing some of these things, would they be tolerated in the home? And if the answer is no, then it's time to do your own ghost busting, which I talk about in the book is very, very possible to do yourself. You don't have to bring in experts to do ghost busting. You just have to get some good information and get them out of there.
Right. And for me, I mean, to me, it's just a matter of also courtesy, because truly they are stuck. If they're in ghost form and not spirit form, they're stuck. Mm-hmm. They can't go into the different dimensions, and therefore they're not growing. And the whole key for all of us is to grow. So if they're stuck there, they need to find a way back into the light so that they can continue on with their own growth, regardless of whether they're benevolent or not. They need to be let go.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, if you're in the mood, I mean, if you feel like that's a service call you can do, of course it's a real gift.
Yeah.
We forget, you know, we can really do a lot of service work for the undead, you know, I mean the dead.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's not, they're not, you know, out there like in People magazine. So we don't think of them as much.
And that would be really cool if there was a People's magazine for ghosts.
That wouldn't it? How to get help crossing over, you know? Celebrity
Who
dead
I've helped.
People.
Yeah.
What they're wearing now.
Well, they're wearing the same things they wore before.
Right. That's right. You're right.
But it's cool. Okay, so let's talk about sorcerers and wizards.
Well, you know, it's a definition I have in the book, which is the idea of where these people get their true energy from. Are they getting their energy from divine and God and their self-authority, or are they getting their energy from you by sucking you dry? And, you know, that distinction was never made for me. You know, I don't know about you, but I didn't have anybody tell me about that concept.
No.
And now that I've learned it, I know what to watch out for because, you know, not that I'm above it either. I mean, sometimes I want to get lazy and get energy from people in terms of, you know, advice or have them do something for me that I should probably do myself. But I mean, when you're with people who are constantly draining your energy, you feel drained, then that's the time to look at what kind of person is this. Is this a person who I can have equal energy exchange with, or are they exhausting all my resources?
Yeah. Did you want to talk about the differences? Which is the
source? Well, yeah. I mean, the wizard notion I float out there is wizard gets its hookup directly from divine. The sorcerer gets its energy from other people. And the sorcerer is kind of the dark magic where you're really kind of a sneaky person. You are kind of a power over person, which means you don't really, not really interested in building people up and supporting them. You actually feed on their discomfort. Whereas a wizard, because they're more hooked up with divine, is more of a positive influence and has more positive energy and is not trying to control and manage those around them.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've all had energy vampires.
Right.
And as you say, we've probably done it ourselves to some extent, maybe more so when we were unconscious and younger than now. But, you know, what do we do for ourselves when we're in that type of situation?
Well, again, you know, it depends on the extremes of it. I mean, if it's you're in an abusive relationship, you're with an abusive boss, you're with a friend who just won't shut up and talks about themselves all the time, you know, what the level is. But first of all, it's like, you know, work with your guides, work with your higher power to have clear vision about what's going on. That's kind of step one, is just get clear about it. And step two is to ask for all the support you can get to get out of it, which would mean, you know, good friends, a minister, a counselor. I mean, whoever's going to help you get out of that, you know, even if you have to use the jaws of life to pull yourself out of that relationship or to get that person out of your life. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and it's not some work, you know. I mean, you, first to see it and then to believe it's a problem, right?
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I guess this kind of goes into the addiction and hitchhikers aspect too. But I mean, you know, addictions, it's a funny thing because I think we all kind of take on addictions to, you know, to self-medicate ourselves so that we're not to distract ourselves from part of this journey because it's not always easy. So we all pick up things, whether it's, you know, alcohol, sex, food, you know, we do these things to distract ourselves. And you talk about that in the book.
Well, you know, again, probably people talk intellectually about addictions, but when it comes to us doing our own self-examination about addictions, it's a different story. Because, first of all, you know, there's that river in Egypt, denial. You know, we don't want to look at what our part in an addiction might be. But, you know, it's very prevalent, and especially things that affect your reasoning from the neck up. I mean, I'm talking about drugs and alcohol, even prescription drugs, mm-hmm. where you really do surrender your clarity. And I speak from experience as a recovering alcoholic, but I also know from a lot of my clientele that once they've got this addiction energy around them, especially with stuff that gives up their clear cognitive thinking, then they also get entities. And entities, which healers call hitchhikers, are the people who take a free ride with you but suck you dry. Mm-hmm. And you know, and you know, the degree of addiction obviously goes down the food chain. I mean, you can have food addictions and, as you say, sex addictions, you know, things that distract you from actually having to hook up with divine. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I can sit here and talk to my blue in the face about, oh, bad addiction, bad addiction. But I think the best thing you can do for yourself is to examine your life and to say, okay, do I have free choice to pick up a drink or not? Do I have free choice to take this medication or smoke this drug or whatever? Or has this drug got me? Because, you know, if you can't say no to something, then chances are that drug has you and you don't have that drug.
But it's just one small chocolate chip cookie.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yes. Oh, yeah, and the bag of them that came with it.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the big ones is drama. I mean, we're so addicted to that drama, that high of our story that we tell ourselves that continues.
Ew, that's so great. You brought that up. You are so right.
Yeah.
You're so right.
Yeah.
The drama thing is really funny. And as someone I know said, you know, it runs in family trees, you know, I can watch, you know, some of the teenage girls that I know that they're, you know, it goes up their family tree. It just, there's a lot of satisfaction in that, because I think that whole I'm getting attention with this high level of emotion, and dropping the drama. And I think, you know, you bring an interesting point, because I think once you finally find that sobriety place with drugs and alcohol, then I think that drama comes in even bigger.
Mm.
Because it's like that, then you can have the drama. And I mean this is all stuff that we, as we get older as women, you know, there's a time and a place to have some fun with your addictions, no question. But, you know, when you get to be about 35, 40, 50, 60, then it's time to start maybe reevaluating what you really want out of your life. And, you know, on a soul level, it's like if you don't clear up some of this stuff, you're just going to have to come back and do it again. So why not just get it done now?
Mm-hmm. I'm with you, sister. So let's talk about how we can enhance our ride.
Well, having fun, being creative, which again, another aspect of self-care is creativity, silliness, daring, taking some risks. I mean, there's a thing in the book, the chapter is Wacky Tools to Enhance the Ride, which is also inclusive of, you know, some of the metaphysical tools of crystals and
pendulums
and some of the things you'll find in the New Age bookstore to kind of help you on your journey so that you don't have to do all of it yourself.
Mm-hmm. You talk about icons, altars, and rituals, and you have music in there, but you know, there was something I liked what you had said about if you have a statue on your altar and that you can, you know, have them do the work for you.
It works. I mean, I have various statues at my house, and one of my very favorite is a very large of the Virgin Mary that came from a monastery up in Canada. And at various times in my life, I've really struggled with letting go, especially when it pertains to my family and my children, but letting go and letting God. And I would light candles and put it in front of the Mary, and I would find that it would give me a lot of relief. And as we, you know, one of the things that I do, you know, a couple of times a year is I'll do an online class, a Psychic Housewives Handbook class. And what we do is we do take some of the exercises in the book, such as turning stuff over to an icon, but it's not idol worship. It's just the icon holds the energy of whatever that icon symbolizes, which in the case of the Virgin Mary, I think is letting go, you know, and allowing, and in a feminine way, like turning it over to the sacred feminine, to the goddess energy. But the point is that, you know, when you try this stuff, you find out if it really works. And again, the proof's in the pudding. And what I find in the class is that when people turn this stuff over to another energy, that it gives them a lot of relief and a lot of miracles results.
Right. Right. So we've talked about kids a little bit, but you mentioned very briefly about the sentient kids that are coming in, and, you know, how do we help them?
If you have a sentient child, or you have a sentient child client, The first issue is that they have to learn they have the power to protect themselves, that they have the power to put up blocks. And, you know, the children, I mean, if you can be kind enough to listen to a child and coach a child with some of these basics, I mean, any psychic book will teach you psychic protection. And, I mean, I think it's really important to get this information in the hands of kids so that they don't go into a crowded place and completely lose their mind. And there's a lot of kids that will get very upset stomachs, get headaches, get weepy in big crowds because they have this, what you call sentient, which is you're sensing other people's feelings. They have that, you know, inherently as one of their psychic abilities, but nobody's able to identify it for them, so they're kind of a wreck in public.
Right. Yeah. And it's, a, you know, it's just good to be aware of because these kids, some of these kids are, and I think it's part of the problem with autism. I think, you know, because they came in with no filters, they have to like completely shut down and be in a completely different dimension, which is, you know.
Yeah. And they're, boy, I mean, just the few autistic children I've known are just unbelievable as, you know, unbelievable souls, aren't they?
Yeah. Incredible. Yeah. So you mentioned, you know, for the kids that, you know, you really need to stand and walk in your truth and have integrity so that, you know, that the kids can understand and know, you know, firsthand, teach through experience.
Well, I think, you know, being the best example you can be of integrating these abilities is the first step towards making them more comfortable. And also, you know, the important part of navigating it in society, because I tell moms who have psychic kids the same thing I tell my own kids, which is you don't need to go tell every Tom, Dick, and Harry that you have these abilities. I mean, you should know that they're important and they're natural, but not everybody has them and not everybody believes in them. And so to take care of yourself, it's something to talk about at home and with the family and maybe a good friend, but it's not something you wave around out in the schoolyard because it's just not appropriate.
Yes.
And that's the thing about being mommies. I mean, one of my great hopes for the book and the work that I do is that as mommies, we can steward a lot of these abilities that our children have and not take responsibility for the abilities that they have, but to really give them the tools so that they can navigate with the abilities in a way that's, like, fun and helpful.
Mm. Yeah, and I think, you know, that's a huge part that as we get into this, we kind of become way too serious. I think, you know, a lot of people out there in their spiritual journey, I mean, they're making it so much more unpleasant than it necessarily has to be. I think remembering to have fun and to laugh and to have a sense of humor about a lot of this stuff is very important.
I agree. I'm kind of surprised at some of the morose stuff out there on spirituality. It's like, you know, I mean, if you talk to your guides lately, they're usually pretty funny, you know? And I do believe that if we're not, you know, if we're not enjoying this and laughing, then what's the point? You know, it's not all, you know, a bed of roses, but a lot of it, it's pretty darn funny. And the angels are operating, I think, on a very high vibration, which includes a lot of laughter and humor and seeing the irony in things.
Yes. So this has been a pleasure. Is there anything else that you would like to tell us before we go and then do some selfless promoting? So tell people how to get
on. I just would encourage anybody who's listening to this that to really relax and gently explore your abilities. And if you're listening to this show, you are already aware of some of your abilities. So, you know, and there's many, many resources out there. And if you would so choose to visit my site, that's perfect too. And we have chat groups and I have a book and we have a YouTube videos and blah, 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 which is psychichousewives.com. But again, just really appreciate your work, Lori, to get the word out there that this is all, you know, good stuff for people following their intuition. And I appreciate the opportunity to be on your show.
Hey, it was wonderful.
Thanks, Lori.
You're welcome. So hopefully we can have you back again. Maybe talk about something different somehow.
Yay!
Yay! All right. Thanks, Lorraine.
Thank you. Many blessings.
You
Goodbye.
Too. Bye.